What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Hot Take, where I, along with my co-host, Nat, give you our hottest takes on all things NBA. What's up, Nat? How you been, bro?
I've been happy. I've been infuriated. I've been a lot of things, to be honest. But, you know, we'll get to that in a bit. Don't worry.
Mixed emotions, huh?
Mixed emotions for sure.
I mean, let me tell you, man, this 1 week, how much 1 week like does to a person, man? What a difference a week makes.
I know.
Crazy week in the NBA. With that, I mean, let's jump right into
it. Let's do it. Yeah.
You know, let's start off with Rockets versus your team, the LA Lakers.
That's right.
Let's just talk about the game. Let's just talk about the series in general, man. Like, what are your thoughts?
You know, as you said in previous episodes, for game one, it's a feel-out process for LeBron. He's definitely taking it a little less seriously, game one, feeling out, you know, his opponents and whatnot. But again, like for game one, it was not right for any of us to really judge that in the sense of predicting that it'll be a bad series for the Lakers, which it entirely was not. First off, hats off to the most valuable Lakers player, which is Russell Westbrook. you know, his turnovers, his terrible ball control, you know, it was more of the Rockets just not, you know, not winning this than the Lakers winning this. The Lakers were doing everything right. They were hitting more shots towards the end of that series. But for the Rockets, you know, after Daniel House and his situation, I feel like they lost motivation. They lost their charisma for the series. So I think that, you know, it was just more of James Harden, you know, being cold, Westbrook being Westbrick, and Daniel House, you know, since Daniel House leaving, that was only a six-man rotation. You can't have six people playing the entire game, exactly. And they all being small, too. It just doesn't work, especially against AD, JaVale. I mean, you know, they didn't play, but, you know, against LeBron and AD, you can't have six guys who are small, you know, playing that series. So, of course, you know, winning in five was inevitable for them. So now I turn it to you. What do you think?
So for me, we both agreed on game one that it was just LeBron's feeling out process on how to attack and handle the Rockets. I feel like after game one, the Rockets may have had like this false sense of accomplishment. Like, yeah, you know, we took down the Lakers in game one. Like, this is going to be cake. I'm not saying that's what they thought, but that's just how I perceive things to be. Because then for four straight games, they just completely disappeared. Like, you go from one of the top defensive teams in the regular season, mm-hmm. to all of a sudden in the elimination game, you get completely blown out. And it's just one of those things where you kind of watch this team and it's like there was a piece of them that was missing, or like they were playing as if like they lost somebody, you know, somebody close to them. And, yeah. You know, not Daniel House. Like, I don't think he counts, but, you know, it was just weird to see the lackluster offense, defense, the overall effort the Rockets put in. Like, it just wasn't there. Like, I don't know exactly what it was. I knew the Lakers were going to win this series, but for them to win it in the way that they did, the way they took down the Rockets, it was just, I thought the Rockets would have gotten at least two games, mm-hmm. but to lose four straight, man, you know, that's, I guess in the bubble, there's a slight truth to not having fans there. I'm sure if it went to Houston, you know, if the series was in Houston, things might have been a little bit different having, you know, play in front of those Houston fans. But at the end of the day, we all know and understand that they're in a bubble. You kind of have to bring your own energy, your own effort. And I don't think the Rockets have like a key energy guy. Typically, it would be Russ. Mm-hmm. Russ would be the one bringing all that energy. But when Russ isn't going, you have to have somebody else bring energy. And James Harden, mm-hmm. he doesn't really play with that like super umph and like enthusiasm and like charisma. You know, he's more finesse and, you know, in your face, but in like a different way. You know, you have grittiness in PJ Tucker, but it doesn't equate to somebody like a Jimmy Butler or somebody like a Marcus Smart or a Marcus Morris. You know what I mean? Somebody that's gonna give you that high energy, mm-hmm. which is something that I think they were lacking. I just want to get your thoughts on this. Pretty much right after they lost the series, Mike D'Antoni informs the team that he doesn't want to come back next year. You know, he's going to move on. So, like, how much do you think did that play in a part in them losing the series? Do you think mentally Mike D'Antoni was checking out, already looking towards the future? You know, like, what possibilities he has? You know, there's rumors that he may go to New Orleans, which I think might be crazy, you know, to see what he could do with a young New Orleans Pelicans team. But what do you think when in terms of Mike D'Antoni and the Houston Rockets?
I think that he pretty much gave up, I would say, maybe game four. You know, like ever since the Daniel Howe situation, you know, I think that people are giving this a lot of attention and a lot of credit for their failure. But I think it was more of, you know, I think D'Antoni really gave up in that game four. And him telling, you know, the Rockets organization that he won't come back was just a sign that, you know, maybe this small ball really didn't work out. You know, it's not what he promised. It's not what they were thinking that it would be, you know. And with D'Antoni, I heard he's going to either New Orleans. I hear maybe Philadelphia, which will be interesting. But maybe he's just done with James Harden. Maybe he feels that, you know, James Harden probably can't win a championship because he does go cold in the playoffs, as we saw, you know, in the series. And, you know, Russ especially. Russ maybe is in the same predicament. Maybe he won't be able to win a championship in his whole career, you know? And I think maybe D'Antoni just gave up on the team after Daniel House, you know, situation. There was no energy. There was no charisma. There was no, you know, passion. Because I feel like maybe that kind of sucked the soul out of that team.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Last week, you had asked me, like, what does Russ need to do in order for them to turn this series around? My question comes to James Harden. You know, for James, in James Harden's position, like, do you think there's something that he could have done differently? You know, what do you think in terms of James Harden?
You know, I think he was doing enough. In game five, I believe he scored around 30 points, but I think it was just the team. You know, like I said before, there was only a 6 or 7 man rotation throughout the whole series, and they were all small. AD was just taking control in the paint. He was doing his own thing. No one can stop him. So I think, like James Harden's quote at the end of the series, he was like, we're only one piece away. So I think that they need to really restructure their team and hopefully maybe gain a good power forward, a good center, just someone that they can, you know, rely on for those, you know, players who are active in the paint, you know, get more boards, obviously. Because, you know, I love P.A. Tucker, but he's not a center. You know what I mean? So it's they just need to figure out what to do ahead of this year's playoffs.
See, for me, what I think needs to happen for this team in order for them to move forward, and like, I know how it's going to sound at first, but I think they need like a true point guard. Nothing against CP3. CP3, hands down, even today, is probably like top 10 point guards in the game. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they just didn't work out. But the reason why I say a point guard, I feel like James Harden kind of needs to tweak his game a little bit in the sense that he can't have the ball every single possession. And when he doesn't have the ball, he just stands around, you know, waiting for things to happen. Mm-hmm. What I think needs to happen is if you get a true point guard and you run plays that James Harden can run off ball, where you're freeing him up for open jumpers, just set up for the wide open shot or attack the basket, you know, something that's going to free him up.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be more movement in that sense. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens. I really feel that overall, they just kind of need to reevaluate the way that they play. Mm-hmm. And the way they attack each and every game.
Do you think that the small ball will be happening next season still?
For the Rockets, I don't think so. Depending on who they bring in, I don't think it'll be small ball. Yes, I feel like the small ball is effective, but only in spurts. I don't think you can run a whole game or let alone a whole series running small ball. You know, it'll hinder you at some point. You know, especially when you run into a team like the Lakers where you have the skillfulness of somebody like an Anthony Davis, who is not only huge, but the agility that he has, the way he's able to maneuver around the court, you know, close range, mid range, you know, he can occasionally hit the three. Mm-hmm. I don't think he can run small ball throughout the entirety of a series. Why don't we move into probably one of the more exciting series that we've had in the second round, which was the Celtics versus the Raptors. I know you told me, you texted me on, I believe it was Friday
after
night.
After the game,
you're like, bro, next show, like, I'm going in. Like, I gotta, so, like, here's your moment. Speak your mind. Speak your truth, right, bro.
Well, first off, this series should not have gone game 7. In reality, the Celtics were the better team from the start. But I'm just glad that, you know, they made that game-winning shot in Game 3. They caught up in Game 4. And, you know, they extended it to Game 7. I was really glad. So I was like, oh my gosh, they might have a chance. They could pull this off. You know, and then here comes Game 7, right? I see constant turnovers. I see Siakam not playing like Spicy P, more like mild P or you know, barbecue flavor P. All right. And now I'm like, what is this guy doing? Half the time he's dribbling into the Celtics defenders. He's dribbling and just giving them the ball. I'm like, what are you doing? Can you pass it to Ibaka? Can you pass it to Lowry? I was just sad because, you know, the Celtics defense was incredible the whole series. And towards the fourth quarter at the end, we saw Norman Powell get the ball. I think they were they up to? Oh, no, sorry. Maybe they were down to or something like that. They were down to, the rookie missed two free throws. So they could have tied the game in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter, right? So my man Norman Powell with the clutch three in game 5 or 6, I don't remember when, but he was running for a layup with Marcus Smart in the back, just running with him, right?
Trailing,
yeah, of course, you know, the obvious choice is to pass the ball. You know, if you got a Marcus Smart behind you, you should pass the ball, all right? But no, he goes for a contested layup and gets blocked like LeBron James on Iguodala 3 or 4 years ago. I'm like, what are you doing? Again, what are you doing? You could have passed the ball. You could have you could have done something. You don't hog the ball, all right? So one missed chance there, right? The Raptors had a second chance to win the game with Fred VanVleet shooting that god-awful three, okay? First off, I mean, that was a terrible shot, okay? I don't understand. I don't understand why Fred had to go Steph Curry. He's not Steph Curry, okay? He's a C-plus Steph Curry, okay? I don't know why he had to shoot that, what was it, like a wing fadeaway three? That arched to
the, yeah, it was at the top.
Yeah,
top,
yeah, right. It arched to the rafters. All right. All in all, I was upset. They played terrible basketball. Boston was playing with confidence. They were not. Siakam was garbage. All right. He was terrible. That's the reason why they lost the game. If they had put in Ibaka and not Siakam in the second half, they probably would have won the game. But, you know, now we're here. I can't go in the past and you know, tell Nick Nurse to take Siakam out of the game. I can't. So now I have to live with it. As you know, my bracket, I picked the Raptors to go to the finals, and now I'm upset. Now I'm upset because that's clearly gone now. There's no chance for me to, you know, brag about that. Now I'm upset. But yeah, go ahead. Now it's your turn. I'm upset. Go ahead.
Okay, so with that said, if you remember, I agreed with you at the beginning of the series. I had the Raptors winning it. But I want to say like halfway through the series, I was like, you know what? I'm flip-flopping. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm changing my pick, and I went Celtics, right? So I picked the Celtics to win. I knew if it was going to a game 7, I knew the Celtics were going to win. The reason I know that, and it's a point that you alluded to, was the defense that the Celtics play. You were talking about the play of Pascal Siakam, one Pascal Siakam.
Oh, God.
The thing is that it was more than just one game. I feel like they locked him down the entire mm-hmm. series. I think in the entire series, he had maybe one good game. But other than that one good game, he was just non-existent. It's almost like when I'm watching the game and I'm watching highlights of the game, I forget that he's there.
Yeah.
I felt like it was the Kyle Lowry and the Fred VanVleet show. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it was just those two. And with the Raptors, right, nobody gave them a chance. Nobody gave them the chance at the beginning of the season to even make it to the playoffs. Once Kawhi left, I was like, oh, that's it. They're done. So first of all, props to the Raptors for making it as far as they did. But when it comes to the play of Pascal Siakam, I feel like the Celtics had the perfect game plan for him. And then people are wondering, like, why did he disappear? Where did he go? When you think about it, in last year's Eastern Conference Finals and all that, you know, the other playoff games, you had a go-to scorer, somebody that could create his own shot, somebody when you needed a bucket could give it to you, and that was Kawhi Leonard. When Kawhi Leonard left, who then takes that role? A lot of the time people were thinking it would be Pascal Siakam, but personally, I don't think he's ready for that. I feel like if anything, having Kawhi there took pressure off of Pascal Siakam to do the things that he did. But when you take that away, and now you're asking somebody to become that go-to scorer, that person to create their own shot, but in reality only has one go-to move, which is a spin move, and he always spins into the Celtics defense. Yeah. There's an issue there. You know what I mean? Like, there would have been no way. And then now you're asking Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet to make plays for you, and that was apparent in Game 7. You also made the point, what the hell was Fred VanVleet doing taking that three? Shout out to Grant Williams. I thought Grant Williams had amazing defense. I think he got a piece of it, which is why it fell short. But like you said, why is he taking that shot anyway? He's not Steph Curry. You know, like I don't know what it was with the Raptors down the line. I just knew deep down that the Celtics were going to take that series mainly because of their defense. And that's exactly what happened.
Kyle Lowry fouling out in the fourth quarter.
Right.
I think that was a turning point in the game also. But yeah, other than that, you're right. Yes.
100%. Because you take Kyle out of the game, who now becomes your go-to scorer? Pascal's not doing anything. Fred VanVleet can't do anything on his own.
Yeah. So maybe if he was in the game, maybe he could have taken that last shot. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, who knows? They only lost by 5, but I mean, really low scoring game for today's NBA, you know, and by these standards, it was a low scoring game. If it was early 2000s, late 90s, this is a pretty high scoring game, but you know, that's a different topic for a different day, but that just goes to show, like, it was a defensive battle, you know. Celtics did their thing. They, like you said, they had the confidence. I also feel like the Celtics were very much like battle tested. You have this young core who for the past 2-3 years now have been in the playoffs, have made deep runs in the playoffs when they weren't supposed to. And then you have Toronto, who made the playoffs last year, but you have a superstar in Kawhi Leonard. This year, you kind of ride that. Everybody rallies around each other, and they go pretty deep into the playoffs. But at the end of the day, you need that go-to person that can get you buckets. And that's where I think the Raptors fell short. So I feel like going forward, either they kind of blow up the team a little bit, make a trade, sign and trade for somebody, you know, get another high-profile guy in there, somebody that can create their own shot. But that was it for Game 7. Speaking of Game 7s, let's quickly go now into Nuggets-Clippers. You know, the series up until this point, because tonight is Tuesday night. They haven't played yet. One more hour before tip-off. Let's talk briefly about Nuggets-Clippers.
All in all, you know, this series can be summed up in one sentence. And that sentence is, no one on the Clippers is a pure match for Jokic. He's been the one dominating the series. It's not really much Jamal Murray. But, you know, in the case of Jokic, Trez can't stop him. Zubac, you know, he's built the same, but he's not as skilled as Jokic to stop him. All in all, you know, Jokic is taking advantage of the series because, again, there's no one at his level. You know, and then you got Jamal Murray, you got Gary Harris, you got Jeremy Grant on the perimeter or, you know, wherever, making shots too. Because I've noticed, obviously, we've all, you know, seen the memes, you know, Clippers blowing 16 plus point leads. And that's because
Game 6, they gave up a 19 point lead. 19.
I know. It's insane. And like, maybe I can ask you this. Like, what do you think about that? Like, why are the Clippers doing this bad, blowing all these leads?
So for me, I feel like in the Clippers' case, ever since the beginning of the season with the addition of Kawhi and Paul George, there was already this stigma, this like aroma in the air that, oh, we got this. We got this on lock. You know, we're going to win. We're going to take the West. And I can see, rightfully so, when you have the reigning finals MVP in Kawhi Leonard, you have an all-star in Paul George. I get why they would feel that way, but I think that hurt them. I think that hurt them coming into the season, because you saw it even early on in the season. They had moments where they would get blown out by like bad teams. Not blown out, but they would lose games that they should have won. It's weird with the Clippers because it's like they have a switch to turn it on and turn it off. And when they get too comfortable, I feel like they kind of power down. I feel that's what happened in Game 5. That's what happened in Game 6. You saw it coming out of halftime. They become too lax, and all of a sudden there's more turnovers. And the Nuggets, being young and gritty as they are, you know, they're going to take advantage of every opportunity that they have. I mean, Jokic, come on, man. That's the MVP of the series right now. Jokic is doing everything.
He's passing, rebounding,
he's scoring. He's hitting one-legged jumpers from deep, you know, like, who is this guy? Like, talking about Kristaps Porzingis being the unicorn. What about Jokic, man?
He's got the giraffe neck shot.
Yeah, like I had Jokic not too long ago. I mean, even this season, he was a potential MVP. He was a candidate in my book. You know, I think he should have been in the discussion for all the things that he's able to do as a big man. And like you said, you have somebody like Zubac or like Montrezl Harrell who clearly cannot keep up with him. Zubac, I feel like, has more success, but I feel like the Nuggets are exploiting the little things that the Clippers give up. And one of those is personnel. I feel like Montrezl Harrell is the current sixth man of the year, but he sure as hell isn't playing like it. I don't know what happened to him. He fell off Lou Will. On offense, the Nuggets are constantly attacking Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell because they either get in foul trouble or you just blow right by them. You know, there's easy buckets right there. Another issue that the Clippers have prior to this season, you know, going back to last season, it was kind of like the Celtics, kind of like the Raptors, where they weren't supposed to make it as far as they did, especially after the big three of LA blew up, you know, with DeAndre, Blake, and CP3 all leaving. Everybody's like, where did this team come from? All of a sudden, they're playing hard. They're playing gritty. I feel like with Doc Rivers coaching those guys, you know, a year ago even, it was all about us against the world. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody believes in us. Let's prove them wrong. And that's what fueled the Clippers last year. This year, you have two bona fide superstars. And I feel like Doc has had trouble trying to get that message across because it's not necessarily true anymore. It's not that people don't believe in us. It's the complete opposite. I feel like everybody was kind of believing so much in the Clippers that how can you kind of change the mindset of the players to get them to the level that they need to be. So I'm not saying it's entirely Doc's fault. You know, it's hard to change the mentality of a team that went from having nothing to all of a sudden having like an abundance of talent. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you get your message across to get them to play at a high level? Because clearly in the last two games, they just fell completely flat in the second
half. That's actually a great take. So maybe that's why Jokic in his post-game interviews are saying that the pressure is really on them instead of on the Nuggets. Do you agree with that at all?
100%. And, you know, Paul George tried to say like, oh no, all the pressure is on them. I feel like the Nuggets have no pressure whatsoever because they weren't expected to make it this far. They weren't expected to make it out of the first round. They thought, I myself included, thought the Jazz were going to beat them. So nobody really believed in the Nuggets. Nobody believed in the Nuggets in this series because who can stop Kawhi and Paul George? You know, they have all these defensive players that they could throw at Jamal Murray and Jokic, and look what's been happening. It's been the Jokic show, you know, the last two games. So I feel that all the pressure tonight is going to be on the Clippers. I feel like they have the most to prove because personally, I feel like if they continue to play the way that they've been playing and if they win tonight and they continue to play that way, that lackluster way in the next series, LeBron and AD are just going to completely exploit that.
For sure.
And I don't think it's going to be as competitive as the series as people anticipate it to be. Mm-hmm. So we got 45 minutes till tip off for game 7 of Nuggets versus Clippers. Who do you have winning this game?
I got Denver, man. I don't know about you, but I'm picking the underdogs tonight. For four straight series, they're down 3-1. I'm sure that, you know, they can challenge that energy and bring it tonight. All the Clippers have to do is just get a lead and then blow it. So I'm going to pick Denver tonight. How about you?
I agree. I had the Clippers winning this. You know, I thought early on, you know, when they went up 3-1, I was like, man, these Clippers are blowing out the Nuggets. Nuggets aren't even in the same league. I'm flip-flopping again.
Flip-flop.
You know, I was right last week about the Celtics beating the Raptors.
I know.
My thinking tonight is that the Nuggets are going to beat the Clippers. I feel like the Nuggets have all the momentum in the world winning, you know, what is it, two straight. So I feel like all the pressure is on Clippers to do something. Last year, when Kawhi was on the Toronto Raptors, they went into a game 7 with the Philadelphia 76ers, and Kawhi had to throw up something like 40-something shots, maybe about, you know, 30, 40 shots, including a game winner just to win that game in a game 7. I think he's going to have to do that again because they're not getting offense from anywhere else. I mean, we'll see what PG does. If Pat Bev can stay out of foul trouble.
Yeah.
if the current six man of the year can produce something, if the former six man of the year can do something, I don't know. I just feel like the Nuggets have all the momentum in the world right now. So I'm betting on the Nuggets.
Also, do you think it'll be a close game?
I do think it'll be a close game. I think it'll be, you know, shot for shot. I don't think it's going to be a defensive struggle like the Celtics-Raptors was. I think it'll be a little bit higher scoring. But, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I got Nuggets, just like you. I got Nuggets winning this one. So with that, one thing I just want to touch on real quick is the series between the Bucks and the Heat. We kind of touched on that last week because as we were wrapping up, their game was wrapping up. Personally, I had no fears going into this series. For whatever reason, I just had the utmost confidence that the Heat were going to take this series. They were just a couple shots away from actually sweeping the best team in the NBA. The Bucks, just like the Clippers, were just this team that in the regular season were so dominant, but coming into the bubble is like, what the heck happened to them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just kind of fell flat, like literally. And then, of course, with Giannis going down, that doesn't help your situation. Real quick, what were your takeaways from the Bucks Heat?
I mean, I'll just say one thing, and that's Giannis is the heart and soul of this team. So once he went down and they had to play game five without him, obviously I didn't see them winning that because they had no chance. They lost their heart and soul. He's their main motivator. He's their team leader. And without them, you know, they were kind of like a, what was it? Like a chicken without its head, that kind of phrase, whatever.
Chicken with the head cut off.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, with Giannis not being there, it was just inevitable that they would lose that series. So that's all I have to say about that.
We also kind of talked about, you know, if they did lose that series, what was Giannis going to do? We threw out some theories out there, but I think we both kind of agreed that he would ultimately stay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what he's come out and said. He's going to stay. I know like people were blowing up about, you know, him unfollowing Bucks players and Bucks on Instagram. But I mean, I get it because when it comes to making decisions, you don't want other people in your ear or like all this other outside distraction. So I understand it. Like everybody was like, oh, he unfollowed the Bucks. But think about it. He was only following 8 people and those 8 people were his immediate family members. So like it's not like he only unfollowed the Bucks. You know, he unfollowed everybody. With that, we move on to the Eastern Conference Finals, which is Heat Celtics. Man, I said earlier that I had no fear with the Heat playing the Bucks. I also had no fear with the Heat playing the Pacers. If I'm being real and if I'm being honest, I'm kind of scared of the Celtics, bro. I'm a little bit scared of the Celtics. You know, like, thinking about it, I don't know what it is. I just feel like these teams are so, so evenly matched. You know, we're talking about the Raptors couldn't really contain Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. The Heat have players that can do that in Jimmy Butler, Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala. I feel like point guard to point guard, Kemba, he can blow up for, you know, number of points. But at the same time, I feel like Goran Dragic could blow up for a number of points. Neither of them are very strong defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them have very strong backups at the point guard position. You got guys that can create their own shot. Jimmy Butler, Jimmy G buckets. G stands for gets. So Jimmy can get you buckets. Jaylen can get you buckets. Jason Tatum can get you buckets. Kemba can get you buckets. This team, for whatever reason, kind of worries me. And my biggest fear, talking defensively, we talked in the past about how strong the Celtics are defensively and how strong Miami is defensively. But the biggest concern that I have, and I also alluded to this in the last podcast, was Miami has a tendency to have a high turnover count.
Mm-hmm.
And with turnovers, bad shots, what have you, that's going to be easy buckets for the Celtics. It could be either a defensive struggle or it could be an outright like shootout, you know, with the shooters that Miami has, the shot creators that the Celtics have. There's certain players that can be X factors for each team. For example, I'll start with the Celtics first, you know, if I may. I feel like an X factor for the Celtics is going to be Kemba Walker. Can he be healthy for the entire series? Can he produce consistently day in and day out? The other X factor I have is Gordon Hayward. We don't know what version of Gordon we're going to get when he comes back. But at the end of the day, he's going to be somebody that is smart offensively, defensively. He's going to give you something.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to watch out for that. And then, of course, you have your young core in Tatum and Jaylen Brown. As young as they are, these guys have been in this position before. guys that are just as gritty as somebody like a Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat. You have somebody that's willing to do the dirty work in a Daniel Tice and this Cantor. You have the feistiness. You know, we talk about how mean and feisty Miami can be with Jimmy Butler and Duncan Robinson and the coldness of Tyler Hero. But you kind of have that with the Celtics also. Mm-hmm. Marcus Smart is not going to back down from anybody. Enes Kanter is not going to back down from anybody. You know, you have these guys that are just as gritty as Miami. Mm-hmm. So honestly, on paper, the Celtics team, they scare me. I have the utmost hope and confidence in Miami, but I know it's not going to be an easy series like it's been for the past two rounds that they've been in. Mm-hmm. What's your take for Heat Celtics?
I'm going to go the other way and say that the Celtics will choke. They don't scare me at all because as much as I do not like them for eliminating my Raptors team, I want them to lose badly to the Miami Heat for that. But in terms of like, you know, being serious about this, I'll go your route and kind of nominate MVPs slash critical people for this series. For the Celtics, it's Gordon Hayward because he's coming back from an injury that was in the first round. So like you said, we have no idea what kind of Gordon Hayward to expect moving forward. And how is that going to ruin or improve the rhythm of the Celtics team? Because they were on a roll these past few games and series without him. So him in the mix now, will Jaylen Brown score more? Will he be, you know, taking a seat back? Will Kemba get more shots up? Who knows? So again, like we have to see Gordon Hayward and how he will affect this team moving forward. The Miami Heat, though, I think as we crown Jokic as the MVP for that series, I will crown Adebayo as the potential make or break person of this series. We'll see what he does to the Celtics team because they have no Adebayo on their team. They only have Daniel Tice. And honestly, who is that guy? No offense, but he's good, but no offense. So then again, it's up to Bam to, you know, make a stand to make an impact in the series because, you know, I'm sure all the Celtics players are going to go right up to Jimmy Butler and try to guard him and try to neutralize him. But if Bam can make a stand, if he can, you know, do what he does best, I think they can win this. I mean, I have full faith that they'll win this, but I think Bam will obviously be the factor in this all.
So I touched on who my X factors for the Celtics were. My X factors for the Heat, I agree. I feel like Bam Adebayo is going to be, he wasn't able to do much in the last series against Milwaukee because, like you alluded to, there were players that were able to kind of battle with him. You know, he's not necessarily very big or tall. In this series, I feel like he is a more skilled offensive player than what the Celtics have on the opposite end. But then again, it's kind of like you really have to, like Bam just has to, I don't know. I feel like the series prior, him not producing as much, you know, does that carry over into this series? You know what I mean? The other X factor I have for Miami, believe it or not, is Kelly Olynyk, the former Boston Celtic. I feel like Kelly Olynyk gives you the ability as the big man to spread the floor so well. He can pick and pop. He can pick and roll. He can do what they call the Kelly keeper where he fakes a handoff and, you know, drives straight to the basket for a dunk or a layup or what have you. I just feel like with Kelly Olynyk being able to spread the floor as much as he does, that gives you an advantage. The only issue is he going to get those shots? Mm-hmm. What kind of defense is the Celtics going to play on him? Because I'm sure they did their homework. You know, I feel like you're going to have to get production, good production from the Miami bench, which I think is stronger than the Celtic bench. But on paper, everything looks fine and dandy. It's all about execution. You know, can they do it? We talked about Bam being an X factor. We talked about Kelly being an X factor. Right now, as we're recording this, it's just over 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Celtics are up by 10. They're up by 10. Bam only has 9 points and Kelly Olynyk only has 4. So I feel like, I don't know, they gotta get something. Duncan Robinson has to step up. The only one that's really playing well right now for Miami is Goran. He's a veteran, you know, he's used to this. If things don't work out for Miami, if they end up losing this game, I'm sure they're going to fine-tune their game plan and come ready for the next one. This is the other fear that I had about this series was the fact that the Celtics are coming from a Game 7 scenario where they have all this momentum, all this energy. They're used to playing
right,
like it's a Game 7. the Heat have had all these days off, you know? And like, I understand Heat culture, you be ready, stay ready. Like, I get that, but it's different than actually physically being ready physically and mentally. So the other hope that I have is, even if the Celtics take this game, they've played a 7-game series against the Raptors, which is not a walk in the park. And then now you're going to have to play this Heat team. My hope is that the Celtics kind of wear down. I mean, those starters played heavy, heavy minutes. Can they continue to keep that up? Can they continue to play heavy minutes? Can their starters give you the point production that they've been doing? I don't know. I hope not. You know, I want Miami to win. I feel like this is the year that Miami could actually take it all. Agreed. With the current roster that they have. So, man, I'm nervous. I'm scared. We'll see, though. We'll see what happens. Predictions. I guess we kind of already said it. What's your prediction for Heat and Celtics series?
Tonight, I think the Celtics will take this game. But in the series, I'm taking Heat in six. Just because Boston eliminated my Raptors, I'm upset. So I want them to lose badly.
So the Heat fan in me says that they're going to win this series in six. The realist in me thinks that the Celtics will take it in 6 or 7 games.
Oh, snap. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a hot take. That's a really hot take.
That's a hot take. It hurts my heart to say. I hope I'm wrong. I pray that I'm wrong. But this team, I'm telling you, watch out for the Celtics, man. They kind of scare me a little bit. But I'm a Heat fan. I'm pulling for Jimmy, rest of the guys. I believe they can do it. Anything else before we end?
Let's end with the hypothetical in the West. Will the Lakers beat Denver or the Clippers? Or, you know, obviously we don't know yet because of Game 7 tonight.
I think if the Clippers win tonight, the Lakers will win the West. If the Nuggets win tonight, I'm going to make the bold hot take and say that the Nuggets will win the West.
Oh, snap.
And I say that, I hope that, I pray for that. Because then if Miami comes out of the East, I feel like it'll be a cakewalk to beat the Denver Nuggets. That's my hope. That's my hot take.
Oh, I got
Heat Nuggets in the finals.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, as you know me, I'm a huge LeBron fan. So regardless of Game 7's winner tonight, Lakers in 5, LeBron, age 35 years old, won his 4th chip this year. End of story.
For Kobe.
Once again, I'm clarifying that I am indeed a decent human being. I did not leave him hanging at the end of that episode. I did say for Kobe as well. But, you know, I figured why not just instead insert a shameless plug of our socials. So here I go. Please follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the same handle, at Fuse Podcast. That's at P-H-U-Z-E Podcasts. And, of course, follow us already if you haven't done so. On Spotify or Apple Podcasts, leave a like, leave a review, or even a share. Either way, we are very grateful for your support. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode, and we'll see you next week. For Kobe.